You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event of tonight's live broadcast. Welcome back to the program this Saturday evening, July the 31st. We have been teasing this appearance during the first 2 hours, and it is now here, our interview with Larry Ray Hardin. Larry Ray is a former special agent with the Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA. And after a 30-year career, he now teaches criminal law, runs his own private investigation firm, and is the author of 3 books that detail his life and experiences fighting organized crime and the so-called war on drugs. You are in for a treat this hour. And without further ado, we welcome now, making his debut appearance, Larry Ray Hardin. Larry Ray, how are you?
Thank you, James, for giving me this opportunity. I'm looking forward to this. I've done this several times before, but not at this level here. And boy, it truly is. It's an honor that I had some great support, and for you to reach out and for us to talk here tonight. I hope
Well, indeed. Listen, my friend, the honor is entirely ours, and I want to thank a mutual friend who we won't name for putting us together. But I had the opportunity to talk with you at length earlier this week over the phone, and it was just like old friends coming together, as it so often is with people who are doing the best they can with what they've got. Well, welcome to the show, and I want to be sure to get this website out early and often, Larry Ray Hardin, that's H-A-R-D-I-N, LarryRayHardin.com. There you can learn more about tonight's featured guest and learn more about his books. And each of these books would be worthy of a full hour-long interview just based upon the contents thereof. And while your first 2 books capture the trials and tribulations of your career as a DEA agent on the Arizona-Mexico border, your most recent book is an autobiography of your childhood growing up on Big Plum Creek Road in a poor and rural part of Kentucky. And the name of that book is Home Is Never the Same. And it delivers many stories of hard luck and tragic misfortune, as well as several humorous moments and spiritual discovery. We're going to talk about that later, but I love Larry. I got to admit, we were talking about you being a native-born Southerner and what Southern heritage means to you and some of these other things, even after a lifelong career in the DEA. And just, you were so real and so candid about all of these things. I felt as though it was a great fit for this audience. And if we don't cover it all tonight, we'll love to have you back for an encore interview. But let's start at the beginning. 30 years in the DEA. I mean, you've probably forgotten stories that would fill any given radio program.
Well, you know, James, everything you just said right there, I'm very humble. I truly am for you to even express the where I came from, which your audience has to know that I came from. I call it Big Plum Creek, but all those years in law enforcement. When I say DEA, I'm talking about all together with the military. I put that in there with that. I had like 24 years with DEA, but through the partner about the military, and of course I worked for immigration, the old immigration, in the federal prison, and as adjudicator and so on. But you know, just for you to say that and for give me the opportunity to talk about where I'm from the hollers of the creeks. I don't know if your audience or the public would know, but I can describe. But it's just being from that location there, and that's who I am today after all these years. I haven't changed. And but thank you for that introduction there.
Well, thank you for again giving us the time and coming on to talk about it. And I do want to focus over the course of the next couple of segments after we take this first break in a moment about, again, the DEA, what it's really like on the border, what the war on drugs, what that's all about. Does it even truly exist? We'll get into that. And then I want to wrap up the interview later this hour by going back to your Kentucky roots. And again, this is what we're talking about. You started out living the simple rural life of the South. You finished your career in a dangerous and unforgiving manner, fighting the drug cartels on the Arizona border and even in Colombia. And you served your nation with honor. And in retirement, you served your community by visiting bedridden veterans of foreign wars and cheering them up and thanking them for their service. And it's been an adventurous life. You've thoroughly documented it. I think it could be something that could turn into a feature film. But this was something you touched on during our phone conversation, and you made mention of the fact that, hey, you know that a lot of good people out there, a lot of patriotic people, look at the Alphabet Soup law enforcement organizations with skepticism, and rightly so. But obviously, you came from that, and not all of them are like that. What could you say about that? Has it changed since your career ended, and it was at the beginning of your career different than it is now? I mean, are there truly good guys there, or are there more good guys than bad guys when you're looking at the DEA, the FBI, the CIA? What are we dealing with now?
Oh, you'd be surprised from my experience. That's my phone. You'd be surprised that even today, there are some really, really great people out there. I worked very closely with the Border Patrol agents at that time and with a lot of FBI, of course, of other agencies. And they are, I met some great people, but you always have those individuals that you just have to be very cautious with. I'm talking about law enforcement brothers and sisters. There's always that one or two or maybe that somehow went to that dark side. And that dark side is money, it's greed, or some cartel or someone got hold of their family first and threatened them to turn, to take a look somewhere else. It's a very violent and it's a very evil world. And I had no intentions, James, not at all. From my background, where I came from, it just seemed like whether you believe in God or not, it just seemed like those doors opened up for me. And I say this, I was very blessed. Didn't realize how blessed I was to have an opportunity to work for DEA, which is, as you mentioned, the Drug Enforcement Administration. You know, but now it was hard. It was difficult for me to get there. But at the same time, I think a lot has to do with my background. I wouldn't take when someone said, well, you know, you need to change your last name, you know, from a Harden, you know, to your wife's last name, which I married a woman, beautiful, a flamenco dancer, a great cook from the south of Spain. And south of Spain is no different from the south of anywhere in the United States. There's a big difference, and the people from the South, that's to me, that's people from the North might get upset with me, but that was the heart of Spain, tradition Spanish, the flamenco dancing, the fighting of the bulls. Even though the language is, you know, they really speak it fast like we do back home in Kentucky or whatever, but it just seemed like one door just opened up for me, and I did encounter corruption. I was seeing things that I considered it was wrong. It was wrong for to do what they're doing, certain cops, that is, or certain law enforcement. But I just didn't pay attention to it because as long as it didn't affect me, you know, I'm going to do my job the way I should do it, and that's is treat everyone the same, no matter what. Once you put the cuffs on them, the handcuffs, treat them the same. But my career was very short, a year and a half when I got hired on in San Diego. I was transferred out to the southwest border, and that was, to me, Arizona. That's very conservative, but it's the Wild West out there, and you have to be very careful what you do and who you talk to. I'm talking about people in law enforcement. And
hey, are you sure you're not an old hand at media? Because you segued perfectly into this first break of the hour and gave us a stopping point that will give me a perfect opportunity to do exactly what I was hoping to do, and that's come back and talk about the situation at the border. You wrote books about it. We'll find out what your experiences were there, what is going on the border now, and why. We'll ask Larry Ray Harden, LarryRayHarden.com.
How many times do I have to tell you? I swear, it just goes in one ear and out the other. Don't you understand English?
Your children are probably too polite to tell you.
Hello, those things on the side of your head aren't turnips.
But they get just as frustrated when you won't listen to them as you do when they won't listen to you.
Do I need to speak slower?
In fact, few things show children how much they're valued and respected more than a parent's willingness to listen.
Tell me what you did at work today.
Studies show when parents listen, children develop better listening skills themselves. They also tend to have more self-confidence and are more likely to avoid alcohol and drugs.
Now sit down here and tell me all about it.
When you really listen, love is what they'll hear.
Thank you for sharing that with me.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, For more tips on strengthening your family, visit family.mormon.org.
If Planned Parenthood were what they publicly declare themselves to be, they would welcome transparency. We all know why they hide, because we know what they hide. We can confirm federal judges who follow the Constitution rather than reverse engineer their preferred policy outcomes. The truth about abortion is spreading because of advances in medical imaging, because of brave journalists, tireless activists, compassionate doctors, nurses, and other healthcare professionals. The rising generation of young Americans is the most pro-life in decades because they know too. And one day soon, we will reaffirm our nation's principles in their dignified fullness and avow once again that all men are created equal. All are entitled to life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Well, we're back for the full and complete third hour with our special guest of the night, former DEA agent Larry Ray Hardin. And as I told you earlier in the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, what he's seen, what he's experienced in 30 years, we couldn't cover in a single hour, and we hope that this will be the first of more appearances to come. But what we are going to do is try to paint in broad brush strokes a picture of his career. And what we're going to do over the course of this segment, the following segment, and the final segment this hour is focus on each of the three books he wrote that details his life and experiences. But before we get into Path of the Devil, Larry Ray, let me just ask you very quickly a broad question of what's going on currently, because you mentioned in passing on our telephone conversation that, hey, the media is saying they're bringing, you know, these kids are coming over to the border. A lot of them ain't kids. So what is the situation on the border now and why, in your opinion?
It's not my opinion. It's my professional experience. And I tell people that all the time. For example, you, James, of all people, when you give your opinion, it's not your opinion. It's your experience of life. The ups and downs and loving this country and seeing what's happened to it. And that's why you've got this very successful show that you're doing, because people are reaching out and they see this. It's taking a turn. These guys at the port of entries, on the border or throughout our world, even the military. I have met a lot of military people when I'm in Europe, and I have met individuals over there that are willing to come back. And so, I mean, they say things to me that just shocks me, that they're willing to come back and they're ready to fight. And I don't, for me personally, I don't want to ever see that in this country. We went through a bad time with Civil War. The generations of our young people today, they don't know anything about history. Trust me. In the college courses that I teach, I'm in the classroom, I have to explain to them our history and the difference in what happened, because they don't know. To get back to the border, there are a lot of problems, but it's not the men and women out there. Sure, we have corruption, and I identified corruption at those people that worked at the port of entries. Okay, and I will talk a lot about it. That's the first book, how I was going after. Actually, I got started with when two agents were left for dead. I'm proud to mention their names, Don Ware and Roy Stevenson. That was years ago. But since that book came out, I did get a reply from an agent from many years ago that worked in investigation. He's telling me that I was quite wrong of some of the things I was saying. But you have to understand why he said that, because in this investigation that I got started, and we'll talk about it, but I started identifying corruption, and I had two informants. I don't call them snitches. I call them confidence informants that trust me, and I trust them with my life, and they the same with me. And they got into that organization, and we identified exactly what took place and happened. But today, James, and I hope everyone understands, there are some great, great people out there that love this country like I do, because I worked with them. I worked with them closely. But their hands are, in a way, they're tied. This thing is out of control. It's politics. You know, with our first, when I say first, well, President Trump, he's always been the president that I have a tremendous amount of respect for. And I say that, I don't tell your audience or anyone out there, I'm not, you know, whatever. But I got to know him. And the way I did that first book, I sent that book to him at the White House. And I was in Rota, Spain, teaching criminal justice. And I got an official letter from the White House. Now, did he read the book? No. But someone read that book and walked in there and told him about it. And so then I knew I was onto something, because I talked about corruption. You know, we talk about other countries as Mexico or Colombia. They're all beautiful countries. But their way of life, that's why people want to come here to this country, because their way of life is poor, it's corrupted, and there is no middle class. And believe it or not, they're not supposed to have any weapons. Look at the European countries. They have no way to protect themselves. And same down in Mexico, but yet you can go down there and pretty well, you know, the cartels run the show. But when people say the men in blue or the women, no. We do have some few that are out there, especially the very young that are coming in, because they caught up in this political, this woke or whatever. But most of these guys, no, they're good people. And I feel very comfortable with them. But once again, James, there are some that I would not turn my back on. But you recognize them.
Well, let me ask you this. So your first book is Path of the Devil, and that's available at LarryRayHardin.com, ladies and gentlemen. And it's based on the true experiences of yourself and a couple of private investigators. It talks about your experiencing bringing down this major crime syndicate on the Arizona-Mexico border. It was the Meraz organization. I have three questions that I really want to ask you. We only have about 3 or 4 minutes left this segment, and I want to try to work through these as quickly as possible. Very quickly, maybe 30 seconds or less, what was the Meraz organization?
You got to really break it down, but to make it simple, they were in charge of a certain port of entry. Along the United States, whether it's north and south, primarily the south, southwestern, there's port of entries, and each one of them are controlled by a subgroup. You know, we have our cartels, we talk about our cartels, or we talk about the government of Mexico or Colombia or whatever. But these port of entries on the side of Mexico, they are controlled by a group of people which are one step higher than your average drug trafficker. You know, not the mules, what we call coming back and forth, but they are the ones that are in charge. And their responsibility is get those drugs into the United States. And the way they have done it, okay, I mean, we spend billions of dollars, I know, but the way they've done it, they have provided their families, members of their families that came into the United States, not all of them, but some of them, and now some of these family members are in law enforcement. Oh, I know for a fact. Okay, because I have a lot of stuff that was developed throughout the case, which we identified the members of the cartel's family working at the port of entries or somewhere throughout the United States in law enforcement. You have to understand that once you're in law enforcement, especially working anywhere close to that border, we use our system to notify whoever, law enforcement, that we're going to be doing a case, we're going to be working down towards that port of entry on the United States side, of course. But then when we do, that information leaks out. And did it leak out?
All right.
But that's nothing new. That's nothing new. That's just way of life. I mean,
Well, pardon the interruption, Larry Ray, but perhaps, and I don't know for certain, but perhaps this would tie into my next question. Is that why you decided in this in your campaign against the Meraz organization, why you decided to hire two private investigators instead of working with law enforcement communities?
Let me tell you, back up here, I never, we don't hire. One thing about DEA, but people thought that I was doing a lot of crazy stuff. How the PIs got involved, and PIs were, well, Jerry Pierce ran the organization, but Jeff Pierce, and a young agent, 21 years old, out of the military, was assigned to come out and help out. The reason why is because Larry Ray Harden was stopping these semi-tractor trailers. I was doing this by myself. It was a four-man office, but that way I kept control. If I do something by myself, it's not going to be able to leak out. And so, because I had to be very careful of that community. But anyway, Jeff Pierce and then later Randy Turkeson, both these PIs started bringing me information about the skeletons in the closet. They were telling me who was corrupted in law enforcement. And I didn't want to hear it because I knew these guys. I knew some very personally. And I knew exactly what's going on, but I didn't need two PIs to tell me that. But these guys here, I developed a close relationship with them because I trust them throughout the next, what, 4 or 5 years. I mean, they cover my back, you know, and I cover their back. There's a loyalty there, okay? And I felt that with these two guys. But I knew what they were doing to me. It was just too much. I had to work in a small community. I didn't want to get anybody hurt. But towards at the end of my, before I got transferred, things started really happening, and they had to get me out of there because I was getting close. I was getting so close that as there's just so much that happened, James. Throughout those 5 years, a corrupted cop that knew the case, he was assigned to me towards the end of my transfer. He threatened, went down and threatened the county attorney's office.
Larry Ray, pardon the interruption. We got to take a hard break. We're going to come back. We're going to let you pick up exactly where you're leaving off, and it's going to segue into your second book, and it talks about the war on drugs, particularly at the border. Stay tuned.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Mike Fortier.
Unvaccinated people continue to fill hospitals around the country as the number of COVID cases rises. Recent numbers suggest more people are getting vaccinated, though. That's encouraging to those like CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky, who has been pushing vaccines since taking office 6 months ago. Walensky yesterday telling Fox News, you can trust the vaccine.
We have vaccinated 164 million Americans. So we have an extraordinary amount of data since December as we started getting vaccinating people. And we've been able to find very, very rare signals when they've occurred. And so I have extraordinary confidence in the safety of these vaccines.
Japan, meanwhile, extending a state of emergency as COVID cases rise during the Olympics. Time runs out to extend a federal eviction moratorium. Efforts to extend it failing yesterday as House Democrats can't get enough support. The moratorium expires at midnight while the House begins a six-week recess. This is USA Radio News.
The best companion a pillow has ever had. You've heard me talking about Mike Lindell's Giza Dreams bed sheets now for a couple of years. They're the perfect companion to the MyPillow. Made with the world's best cotton called Giza, grown only in a region between the Sahara Desert, the Mediterranean Sea, and the Nile River, its long staple cotton makes it ultra soft and breathable. And just like the MyPillow, there's a 60-day money-back guarantee, 10-year warranty. Try it for yourself. Mike Lindell and I promise you'll sleep better or you get your money back. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener special, use my promo code USA. You'll get 2-for-1 pricing plus free shipping, but only by using my promo code USA. Or call 1-800-951-8175 and ask for the Giza Dream Sheets special. And the promo code USA gets you up to 66% off the entire line of MyPillow products. Sleep better with the Giza Dreams bed sheets and save at MyPillow.com. Promo code USA.
Before recessing yesterday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi swears in a new lawmaker, Texas Republican Jake Elzey taking the oath of office after winning a runoff election this week. Elzey on CBS News discussing his legislative priorities.
So as a congressman now from Texas, securing the southern border, which is a national security issue and a humanitarian issue, but I'm also a fiscal hawk, and I'd like to see us stop spending money that we don't have.
The 51-year-old Elzey defeats the widow of Ron Wright, who held the seat until his death in February. Wright's widow was also endorsed by former President Trump. While Trump didn't endorse him, LZ says the two had a good phone call after Tuesday's election. Another phone call President Trump made is under scrutiny. New York Democratic Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney releasing notes yesterday from a call Trump had with Justice Department officials in December. According to the handwritten notes taken by a DOJ official, Trump told former Acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen to say the election was corrupt and leave the rest to me, that being Trump. Maloney says the notes show Trump directly instructed our nation's top law enforcement agency to take steps to overturn a free and fair election. This is USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, we're back with Larry Ray Harden, getting a lot of emails and correspondence already about this interview. Again, ladies and gentlemen, some people are asking me. We've mentioned it a couple of times already, but it's LarryRayHarden.com. LarryRayHarden. LarryRayHarden.com. And we were talking about his career, his fight on the border, and if she has it in her, and we'll see. Larry Ray, I've done this for 17 years, and I can't even remember the last time my daughter asked to come into the studio. But I told my wife and my family earlier this week who we're going to be having on, that we're going to be having you on, and my daughter asked to come in. She said, Daddy, can I come with you so I can listen to the special agent? And she wants to say hello very quickly.
Hi, it's great to listen to you, and thank you for keeping us safe.
Wow, young lady, you're so blessed to be in this country. I know you're so young, but if you only seen the eyes that I've seen those young girls across that border, I don't want to say too much because she's there with you. But I can tell you right now with all my heart, and I know this, a lot of them are not little girls when they come into this country. We believe in that, but those little girls lost that. They lost their little girl. Anyway, I've seen a lot of sadness, and they want to come to this country because we are a beautiful country. The heart of this country has been torn apart. It is torn apart by these politics, and it's destroying. I'm looking out the window right now, and I see the American flag, and I see it. And you don't know how many people that and I visit Gettysburg. I've been down to places that I've seen throughout the world where people died for their belief. And now we have a group of whatever you want to call them, but they're no good. I see it. I hear the voices in politics, and you know, they can call them Democrats or Republicans, but they're not. A lot of them are no good, and we see that. That January 6th, I knew people that were there, more or less. You know, they talked about it. I mean, everything was just incredible how it was just set up. And, you know, I talk to people. We sit down and we go through it. And there's people out there still convinced that we need to change this country. Perhaps we should, because we do have a lot of evil in this country. But, man, there's a lot of good people here. And I met them throughout the world. Yeah.
There are, and at its heart, especially rural red state America, there's some great people here. But I'll tell
you,
sure. I got to say, Larry Ray, yeah. The founding fathers are spinning in their graves so hard right now, they probably drilled to the center of the earth. But with that being said, let's get back to your second book. Your second book, Fighting My Greatest Enemy, Myself. That's the name of the second book. And this is a story, again, about your experience with law enforcement. And I'm reading right now from the... from the description, after serving over 30 years, you retired from the federal government with the United States Department of Justice as a special agent with the DEA. And in this book, the second book you wrote, the second of three, you remind America that this dirty, deadly game is still very much alive and well, the so-called war on drugs. And as a reader, you can be assured that you're not getting just another theory or opinion, it's what you said earlier, but the truth of why there is no war on drugs. And that's what your book covers. So let's just go right there. Describe how and where you found this corruption at the border and how this ultimately led you to the conclusion that there is no war on drugs.
Well, let me back up. I know there's so much to cover, and we have short time, but that first book was the foundation. I am not a writer. I'm an author now, but I'm not a writer. I always write with the facts. That's my whole career. If I'm going to put you in jail or put you, you know, whatever, I have to write with facts. So this book here, I was pushed by two PIs after I retired. They said, Larry, you got to tell the truth. No, I'm not. I just want to go away. Most of us do. But then we got lucky. We found, I call her my agent, Diana DeMille. She comes, she's got a good background, and she decided to go ahead and take the story. We didn't know how to put this thing together. And I said, okay, guys, let's go for it. Let's just get them off my back, because you know what? I did not want to do this, but I did. And so we did, and the feedback I was getting, I mean, people wanted to get in touch with me. And I thought maybe there is something there. As long as they want to hear from me, I'll go ahead and talk about this book. Now, this book here, there's over 35 people, more or less, that lost their lives, bad guys and some good guys. And that first book, mention his name, a beautiful human being, Frank Moreno. Okay, he took the round in the chest. I spent about 3 days with him while everybody else was out there in Bogota, Colombia, looking for the individual that shot him. And, boy, I love, just when you read the book, it's the truth. The one that shot Frank Moreno, he's no longer in prison. He's no longer in jail. He got out, he walked after we spent millions of dollars going after this guy and his family. Half his family was up in Texas under the protection. And by the way, don't get carried away, but most of these bad guys that do their killing, they're no longer living down in Mexico. They're living up here. They feel very, very protected up here, okay, because of our judicial system, believe it or not. So they try to get up here and live in a community such as California. They're very open to the immigrant population here. But the second book, because I realized my experience with God as growing up, my mama, yes, my mom, I might be getting up there in age, but always my mama. And mama always kept us close with eight of us. I was the oldest. My daddy always made sure that, boy, you take care of your brothers and sisters, okay, at school or whatever. But mama always kept that Jesus in her heart. Our Father.
I have to interrupt you right now, and please pardon it, but I've got to accentuate the point you're making here. Because, again, there's so much skepticism, and, again, there's good reason for it in some regards, with regards to law enforcement, yeah, just obeying orders, whatever a criminally corrupt government may tell them to do. We're just going to follow orders, right, no matter if it's doing our duty or whatever. But you need to know, folks, that people like this, that you're hearing, God-fearing Americans like Larry Ray Hardin have been a part of this too, and they've been fighting for the right reasons. And this is actually something in his second book, Fighting My Greatest Enemy Myself. Every chapter of this book ends with your favorite quotes from scriptures. So this is something that is just a part of who you are and a part of the fabric of your being. And it was something that you exhibited throughout life and in your books and certainly in your work as a law enforcement agent. But if you don't mind, I really need to go back. If we could talk about the war on drugs. You say it's an illusion. There is no war on drugs. Could you speak to that?
There is no war. Listen to everybody out there is listening to me now. There is no war on drugs. I learned that when I first got to Bogota, Colombia, when I had an individual, I cannot just briefly talk about it, but he's higher up in the agency, and he was showing me slides, showing me photographs, okay, showing me where the coca leaves are and the poppy fields for their heroin and so on. And I thought, my gosh, we have the incredible military and the technology. Just go in there and just finish this thing. And I asked him. And he looked at me and he said, no, this is agreement between Colombia and United States. We're talking about governments, okay, for us to go in there, because it's agreement with what they call the FARC. It's a revolutionary military that was protecting the fields there, and that way they lead the terrorism of terrorizing Colombia alone, as long as we didn't go in there and destroy the cartels, their drugs. Let me tell you something. When I was there, a kilo of coke was $450-something, let's say $500. The time it got to the border and got across, it got into thousands. Now, I had an informant, and that he made it very clear that the Mexican government finally caught on. You know, we're fighting a war that we're targeting cartels, we're targeting all these individual subgroups or whatever at the border, but the problem lies with the government. The government of Mexico, our government of Colombia, okay, that's where it is. And government of the United States, that's where it is too. It's our politicians, you know. I don't see how in the world they tell the American people all these things, these promises that we're going to finish this thing. But yet somehow when they get elected, something happens. I'm going to mention this here. I know Senator McConnell, Mitch McConnell, okay. I can tell you now, as a person I like, but his politics were horrible. I sit at the table and I watched him play the game back and forth with the ambassador. I was sitting right there. It was my brother that got that meeting for me. And I sat there and I listened to politics. These are lives. I have seen Colombian young men lose their lives fighting this war on drugs for us. They're young. You know why they're young? Because they haven't become corrupted. Okay? And they were dying for the war. And we will go out and we will give them some money, taxpayer dollars, okay, and so on. And that's all they get because they have no pension. They have nothing. But yet they were dying for this war on drugs. And can we stop it? Yes. But I realized when Frank took that round in the chest and I couldn't wait to get out of Bogota anymore, my career was over with because I am not that kind of guy. I just cannot sell my spirit or my soul. And because I knew I had a great job, I got a great pension. I thank God for everything. But now I'm in a position where I do believe. And I listen, guys. I'm not preaching or anything like that. I experience who God is the hard way. And so, but this second book, when the war on drugs, I really start focusing on. You'll see that book. You see a cross and you see a dove. I do believe in that. And
I'll tell you. As jaded as I have become, you have restored a modicum of my faith in, at least, I can't say government, but at least in some agents of our government, you namely. We'll be right back with Larry Ray Hart.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family.
Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
folks, one website you need to remember above all others tonight is LarryRayHarden.com. There you can get more information about each of his three books, Path of the Devil and Fighting My Greatest Enemy, the two we've been talking about for the last couple of segments. We're going to talk this segment about his latest book, which just came out a couple of months ago, Home is Never the Same. But check it out there at LarryRayHarden.com. Don't forget, he may be retired from the DEA now, but he is the head of his own private investigations firm. If you have any need for such a service, I know a guy, LarryRayHarden.com. Larry Ray, I want to transition into this book. We could have spent a full hour, really a full show, a full 3 hours on the war on drugs and your observations and your eyewitness testimony and all of that. We're trying to cover elements of your career, your reflections, obviously the border and the cartels and all of that. I want to transition into this last book, but if you could give us just 2 minutes more on the war on drugs, because it's so fascinating as a listener, as a host and as a listener and as this audience. Let me ask you one more question about that, and I want to be cover. I want to cover your latest book, your memoirs, or I wouldn't be doing my job. But do you think the so-called war on drugs? Do you think that what's going on now will change? And has it ever been different at any other time in American history?
No. I wish we could spend so much time on a man-made drug. I'm not talking about the virus. I'm talking about the fentanyl. I mean, this fentanyl, I can spend a lot of time with you on that. It's manufactured. They won't tell you where, but it's been manufactured out of China. It's been produced, made, and sent right into Mexico. When I went home to Kentucky several years ago, I told my dad, I said, "Daddy, look what's going on." He said, "What?" Look at these. I mean, they're from south of the border, and they're supposed to be cutting tobacco. We call it backer. I said, "Look at them out there cutting tobacco." I said, "Actually, they're not. But they're driving brand new pickup trucks. They're going behind buildings. They're meeting with people. I know what's going on, but people don't—they don't look for those things. But that was a drug deal, and drugs are moving in. When you talk about heroin, the war on drugs, the heroin, black tar heroin, where do you think it comes from? I keep thinking people need to know that the heroin is coming from Mexico. It's coming from Mexico. The marijuana, of course, is all over the United States. The cocaine comes out of South America." It's all been sold to the highest bidder. You know, when the cartels now, they call it on. They don't buy that dope. They don't buy that cocaine. Well, if they tell the Colombians or whatever, they say, "Look, we'll take the 200 kilos that you're going to bring up, but we're not going to charge you for it because we're going to take 100 kilos from you." Okay? So now it started years ago. But the war on drugs, I don't mean it's just so much here that you're asking me a question. I have a lot of passion for it, and I teach criminal justice. I talk to them about it. I'm surprised that I'm still teaching because I tell the truth. The truth, always the truth, no matter what happens. But politics, we're killing our country. Our country is suffocating. And American people know this, and we all know this. But with the grace of God, we keep talking about God, I do. But you know what? Moses had his warriors. He did. It was Joshua. He had people. They're spiritual, but they were warriors. They believed in truth. And we need warriors like that. And they're out there. And I think they're pushing us so hard that they want to run this country. They want to snap. They want us thrown into a civil war. Man, we don't want a civil war because of human life. Life is precious. But yet, it seemed like, and they're Americans. These guys are Americans. And yet, they're trying to destroy our country. And the war on drugs, we can stop that. The colleges, I know, I teach. I can't mention any names, but they warn me many times. I cannot call a woman a woman, a student a female. I mean, in the classroom. I mean, mom and dad, well, they're dead and gone. Like I said, I grew up on the creeks, and I love everybody. I can't help it. It's just love. I love everybody.
Well,
even the bad guys, after I put them in handcuffs, I don't mistreat them because I want to show them what kind of people we are. That we love this country,
And you can't separate. This is important, and this actually sets up what I wanted to talk about. And this our fourth and final segment. And I say this all the time; it's almost cliche on this program when you're rolling how fast the hour seems to go by, and I marvel fairly often. Wow, is it already the last segment of this hour? How did that happen? But I really mean it with this and. you can't separate who you are from your upbringing. And so you've come full circle. Even after all those years in law enforcement, you never forgot who you were and where you came from.
No.
And the impact that upbringing had on you. And so this is your most recent book that just came out in December of last year, so just 7 or 8 months ago. Home is never the same, a family's strong spiritual connection with the place where they grew up. And I'm looking at the cover of your book here. And again, all of these books are available at LarryRayHardin.com. But it reminds me of the place where my grandparents were from and where my great-grandparents, how my great-grandparents grew up. And, of course, you're a generation older than me, and so this would be about the same type of thing we're talking about. And you grew up, in this book, it talks about growing up in a poor farming community in Kentucky. My people were from rural Mississippi. You were from rural Kentucky. You did dirty work, shoveling animal waste from barn floors, cutting corn stalks, tobacco, milking cows,
sir.
Hauling hay, all these chores.
Oh,
your
yeah.
father and your family raised you to honor a man's word and his handshake, and duty trumped any materialism, recreation, and luxuries. And so here's the question. As we talk about this book, Home is Never the Same. Do you feel that this type of upbringing, this traditional upbringing, this all-American upbringing, helped shape the character you needed to perform and survive in the dangerous environment of the drug cartels? And would you share some of those highlights of growing up in the rural South with your family and friends?
Yes, I will. I tell you, I have read, I've seen a lot, and there's a big difference between North and South, always. It's just the way it is. And I read so much material on that, because why are we that way that grew up on the creeks and hollers, whether it's in Mississippi, beautiful, or Alabama, or anywhere along the creeks and hollers and so on. We got close to nature. We know what it means to live on taters or taters and potatoes and maters, tomatoes. We know all that. We know that. We know what outhouses. You know, we were very fortunate. We had not only one outhouse, but we had a outhouse that had a two-seater. Seriously. And
luxury.
We never used it. I didn't use it. And but that house that you see on that cover, that's a house that 10 people lived in. And that's a three-room house.
Wow.
Okay, we moved there.
Hey,
three-room
folks,
house.
You've got to, pardon me, but if for no other reason, ladies and gentlemen, you've got to go to LarryRayHardin.com to take a look at the cover of this book and imagine how 10 people could have lived in that.
We lived, and we lived. We were all so close to each other, and our daddy did some whipping. I mean, there's a story of me, which I finally learned how to do the Elvis twist, and it works. When he takes a switch from a seriously, or a belt, there's a way that you got to move your feet, and you got to scream and everything else. But I learned that really quick. There's things in, listen, when I wrote that book, it was a Christmas book. It was Christmas for my family, for my brothers and sisters. And for people that I went to school with in Taylorsville, Kentucky, and growing up on Plum Creek and Big Plum Creek and R.T. Jennings Country Store, where everybody met for Christmas, or I mean, it's just something that, or yes, ma'am, and no, sir. Thank God Dad whipped me. Thank God the principal at the high school whipped me. But it's just so much there, how we lived. You know, we became snake fighters. We lived in the creeks. I mean, it's just so much there that Mama always kept us close to her spiritual belief. Mama strongly believed in that. Dad did too, but Dad was always working 12 hours. Dad had to work, and you know what? There was no welfare. There was nothing like that. There was we had a Dr. Clem, old Mr. Skaggs at Taylorsville, Kentucky. He was a doctor that if we had any kind of major problem, we went there. And the country store, we always bought right good bologna. That's what I call it. But I loved it. And throw mayonnaise on, some white bread, and some big red with peanuts. We just grew up very close. And my brothers and sisters, it's just so much there. And for some reason, people are reading this book, and they're coming back, and they say they can relate to that. And I just had a niece came down. She's up in towards L.A. She came down. I hadn't seen her for years, and she told me, Larry, she said, I wish. She's never grew up in the South, never been near the South. And she told me, she just looked at me, and she said, wow, you know, you've been a really good father. I said, well, if I did, I would spank you. You know that, don't you? She said, oh, yeah, I know you would. but James, I just want to tell you, listen, I got to give you credit, too. What you're doing, bringing this out there, I'm not going to let you get by just talking about me, but you really have really brought this out there, and I listened to your commercials. I can't stand abortion. I'm just sorry. That's life is too precious, and I've seen things in the classroom and slides. There's so much I can talk to you about. There's something I said yesterday that still comes back to me, or 2 days when you talked to me. When I was in a classroom, and I was teaching organized crime, I'm teaching this to a bunch of students, and they all know that I'm from Kentucky. They know that I'm out towards Taylorsville, Kentucky, not from Louisville or Louisville, but outside of Louisville.
We've got about 30 seconds remaining, Larry Wright. Just want to give you a heads up. Right. 30 seconds remaining.
Right. Well,
I was
Hart,
wrong. Go.
You,
yes.
Huh? Okay. Listen, James, thank you very much.
I wish we could have gotten to the end of it. I was a little bit off in my timing, but listen, we'll have you back. I want to hear the rest of that story, and I want to share it with the audience. This show, as always, sponsored by thekosherquestion.com, thekosherquestion.com. Larry Ray Harden, our featured guest for tonight. Wow, what a fast hour. Even I was wrong about how much time we had left. We'll pick up where we left off next time, and I hope next time comes soon. LarryRayHarden.com. Check him out. Send him an email. Buy a book. Larry Ray, God bless you, my friend. Godspeed. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your work and your example and remembering who you are and where you came from and writing that late book on the South. We'll be back next week, ladies and gentlemen. Good night and God bless you.